Consciousness is not an ingredient in the physical world. And though the question still remains whether science will ever bridge the gap to spirituality, apparently it can be done with a recently made illegal substance called 5-MeO-DMT, which can be stroked out of the Sonoran Desert toad or made in a lab. We continue today with Dr. Martin Ball, PhD, currently teaching at Southern Oregon University and author of Being Human, who was, by the way, an atheist until the 5-MeO had him crossing the bridge. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries.
Here's where I would describe what happened to me is that I underwent an energetic opening and transformation. And this was really the beginning of that in many ways, this energetic opening. Now, also at this time, I started going to the Santo Daime Church. And I went there maybe 2-3 times a month to go drink Daime. And what happened when I started going to the Daime is first my hands started vibrating. So this is all this process of opening to energy. First my hands started vibrating, and then my entire body started vibrating. So I would go and I'd drink Daime, and then I would, almost like going into convulsions, where I would just vibrate like mad. And people were a little bit concerned about me at first, but then, you know, people at the church kind of realized this is just what Martin goes through when he drinks Daime. He vibrates a lot, so they kind of let me go through my thing. And I also, at that same time, over the course of a year, I was kind of alternating between going to the Temple of Awakening Divinity to work with the 5-MeO-DMT, and then going to the Daime to drink the Daime and work with their ayahuasca drink. So over the course of a year, I went through this process of opening to energy that sent me vibrating, and then moved on to different stages where then I started to be able to really feel things with my hands, which I could only describe as I could feel all the energetic threads across the universe in my hands, and it was very perplexing and very strange. It's a long story, so I'm trying to keep it short, but basically what happened after a year of all of that was I reached a point where I fully broke open, energetically speaking, where I started having 5-MeO-DMT psychedelic experiences without any 5-MeO-DMT. It would just happen. And for anyone who's ever taken 5-MeO-DMT, they know that it's the most powerful and profound entheogen, well beyond anything else you could ever possibly take. And this would just happen to me spontaneously, and I could just feel the same energy that I used to only be able to feel in the entheogenic state. Now I could feel it all the time.
Well, that's certainly...
It was like magnets is really one way to describe it. So even in interacting with other people, it feels there's this magnetic push and pull between me and other people in my environment. So this is a complete reorganization of my energetic experience. And within that, also, I find that my voice fluctuates a lot. When I'm more open energetically, my voice tends to get much deeper. I take on a different tone of voice. The way I speak changes, and the way I use my body changes as well. So this was a profound, radical, energetic reorganization of myself and of my identity. So to get to the punchline, through all of this, I basically came to this understanding of what I would just describe as the true nature of God or the true nature of existence. And the product of that is the book Being Human, and also this website that I've put up that's called The Entheological Paradigm, where I kind of reach past all of my illusions, all of my attachments, all of my ego projections, and came to a point of fundamental clarity about the nature of the self and the nature of the universe. And much of that is very much at odds with what most religions have to say on various levels, though there are some key points where I would agree. But it's been very, very radical. So now I have this very strong view of the nature of God, the nature of existence. And I'm trying to put that out there to people in a way that shows a comprehensive view of the nature of reality that is not bound or limited to any particular culture or religious tradition, and within that also a system of practice and experience of how individual people can come to an authentic awareness of themselves to be able to live in a way that is ultimately radically free and liberated from all illusion, from all attachment, and ultimately from fear itself. And I describe it simply as living in the genuine nature of reality. So it's pretty radical. But I also contend that this is true. This is it. And I do believe that this is something that can fundamentally change. Well, I would say it can fundamentally change human culture, human history, and human society.
Yes.
I believe that this is knowledge that is transformative.
Right. I want to walk backwards just a little bit because a couple of things you said, for instance, when you were talking about that physical change in the magnets and how your voice would change, I immediately went to a couple of things. One, you know, if you look at people who channel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they could just simply be, and then also about story, you know, and I know in your book, Being Human, you talk about not getting hung up on story, and I'm with you 100% right there. So it's very interesting. It's like, oh, people who channel are just feeling something from deeper inside, and they maybe translate it into story, like I'm translating Jesus or Abraham or whoever. So that piece is interesting to me.
Yes, and this is really important to distinguish, because within my descriptions in Being Human and also on the website and Theological Paradigm, that I do specifically say that there really is no such thing as channeling. So I really take a lot of strong positions on a lot of things that might be considered spiritual or paranormal experiences, and I say, well, there really isn't any such thing as channeling. Now, what I mean by that is not to deny the experience.
Yes.
Because people certainly experience things like that. And I've been through that myself. See, this is important for people to understand that everything that I write about and that I then dismiss as not being ultimately real, I've been through all of this stuff myself. So it's not like I'm writing about something that's foreign to me or that I'm merely observing from outside.
Right, and you're not writing about anyone else, which is important to say. And the other thing that I just want to very briefly touch on is... you know, when I first spoke with James O'Rourke, for instance, and he talked about his experience with a 5-MeO, saying that when he first started taking it, it would take a little bit of actual physical time before he got to that place where he was saying, thank you, God. You know, it was definitely like a trip. It was a journey. And whether it took, you know, 5 minutes or less or more or whatever. And just the way you started talking about with the mushrooms, well, all of a sudden you were there without either taking mushrooms. And so the neuroplasticity that is going on with this, I think, speaks to not only, you know, where James, for instance, after he did 5-MeO, he knew the road to get there. So now it didn't take any physical time to get there. And I think this is happening in the larger scale of we are one. So it's like these entheogens have, and the 5-MeO in particular, opened up that road for you and James O'Rourke and whoever else is taking it. And at the same time, the fact that you all have been down this road, it's almost like the 100th monkey theory, where like now it can just start happening. So, you know, I guess there's a part of me that wants to be clear that I don't believe that using entheogens is the only way to have an experience. And certainly it seems like a great way to do it, and perhaps could be labeled as a shortcut in a sense, in that, you know, boom, if you want this experience, here it is, and then you can explore on your own how it's going to affect your life and how you're going to work with it all. But I think that, for instance, the children that are being born today, they're so much more conscious on a lot of levels than I was when I was born, or my generation, for instance. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting piece, I think, that individually we can certainly experience going from A to B without using any time or figuring out conscious-wise, and it's all leading us to this place of God, for lack of a better word.
So I think you raise a number of really important things in there. So I'd like to comment on a few of them.
Please.
One, in terms of like the time period of when you get to that full, and I would describe it as a full energetic opening, when you can really open up your energy all the way and have that full unitive experience. That ultimately is a matter of choice. So within the entheogenic experience, for example, I don't care how much 5-MeO-DMT you take, it actually is a choice. And this is one of the really curious things, that this nature of free will is so important, that you can choose to resist the experience, as overwhelming and as huge as it is. You can choose to resist it as much as you want. Now, I don't recommend that for anyone, because that's extraordinarily difficult.
Is it a matter of ego? Does it come down to that?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Does it come down to a matter of ego, not being able to get out of the way?
Yes, it does. Because ultimately, your ego has to choose to say, I accept and I trust and I surrender and I'm willing to completely dissolve into the infinite expanse of my true nature. Now, egos don't like to do that, ultimately, because egos want to maintain a death grip on anything that gives them a sense of permanency, of identity, of stability, anything that holds them back from the unknown. And see, because ego is ultimately a limited energetic construct out of the infinite spectrum that you actually are. Your ego identifies yourself in a very limited way, and ego doesn't want to let go of that. And this is one of the reasons why entheogens are so effective as a methodology, because they are so powerful, especially something like 5-MeO-DMT, where ego is presented with a choice of, look, either hold on and suffer, or just let go right now. So if you can make that choice to just let go and surrender and trust your energy and yourself and what you're opening up to, it can happen instantaneously. But you see, normally, ego doesn't want to do that. And that's why religious traditions and cultural traditions, that they come up with all kinds of symbolisms and rituals and procedures to kind of trick the ego into letting go. But that can be a very long, very difficult process. And within that, actually, there's lots of places for ego to get re-identified into new ego traps.
Absolutely.
This is why I say that entheogens are really, they're the most effective. But there's lots of different ways for people to open to themselves, to open to their energy, to trust themselves, and to get their ego out of the way. Within our culture, a lot of people don't really know how to do that or what that means, which is why entheogens can be such an important tool within that process.
Right. But I appreciate,
there's
Martin,
lots of ways to do it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say, I really appreciate you saying right now that the religions and cultures use rituals and things like, you know, that fall under that category as a way to perhaps trick the ego. And I never looked at it like that. So that is awesome, because my ultimate feeling is that all of these rituals and things like this is that place where people just get caught up in story. So the ego just has a bigger latching on place ultimately, which becomes a block to moving through.
Yeah, well, see, that's the danger. That's what I would consider the danger of ritual, that ritual meditative practices, they provide a lot of different tools, but they also provide things that people can become very attached to, and there can be a lot of story that gets involved in that, where people become more attached to the ritual forms and what it is that they think they're accomplishing, rather than looking at it. I mean, here's the way that I like to look at it, is that really, it's all a game, that we're doing game playing. And within the game, if we take the game a little bit too seriously, then we're just becoming attached to the form of the game, rather than that the game is trying to produce a certain kind of experience for people. And it's the experience that's the important thing. It's not the form of the game itself. so, I mean, I see this a lot. I do a lot of work with people who have spent years of time working in various ritual or spiritual traditions. And honestly, sometimes I have to deprogram them, help them deprogram themselves in order to open to the immediacy of their present experience, because they want to talk about how this is, you know, healing their karma from their past lives, or how they have to open their chakras, or how, you know, they have to deal with this particular astrological sign. There's a lot of story that gets involved.
Right. I'm just laughing because I feel like it comes down to a box. You know, I feel like any system becomes a box. And then and then there is a border or a line around this box. And so all of a sudden there's something that is outside the box.
Yeah.
And it won't fit.
Right. And as soon as there's something outside the box, I mean, really, the full spectrum of opening to your energy means accepting that all things ultimately are you. And so whenever you're putting something in a box and then separating something else outside the box, is we're making these discriminations. And we are saying, well, this is going to be my reality and this is not going to be my reality.
Right.
Ultimately, these are energetic games that we're playing with ourselves.
Exactly.
That don't necessarily serve us. And the beauty of entheogens, especially the beauty of 5-MeO-DMT, is I don't really care what kind of box you have. Whatever kind of box you have, or whatever system you have, or whatever it is that you think you believe, this experience will blow all of that open pretty much within the space of a few seconds. And this is really startling for people, because as I said, I've worked with people who have been involved in various spiritual traditions or meditation traditions or shamanic practices for years and years and years and years.
And they've gotten a long way.
And they have this, what's that?
I'm saying they've gotten a long way with that.
Yes.
But however, there is a however or a but after that.
Yeah, unfortunately, people can get stuck. They can actually get stuck at certain places. And it's different for every person. So,
of course,
everything needs to be individualized. But people definitely get stuck. And when they come, and when I've seen people go through the 5-MeO-DMT experience, every single last person comes out saying, I had no idea. So the experience itself is so profound. I mean, some of these are people who have been doing Tibetan Buddhist meditation for like 17 years.
Of course.
And then they come and they have this experience and they're like, oh my God, I had no idea. Now I understand.
Right. Well, you talk
so
about...
It's revelatory for people.
Yes. Well, you talk about imaginary energy systems, and some people won't want to hear this, that the chakras,
no,
for instance,
mm-hmm,
being based in a belief system. Well, there's very little that isn't a belief system, and the ramifications of that is huge. I mean, for instance, since I've been, you know, working in alternative healthcare since 1975, that's why disease is so slippery to deal with. Because there's so much about it that's belief system. You know, one week,
yeah,
something causes a disease, and next week it doesn't. This week, something cures a disease, and next week it doesn't. It works on one person, but it doesn't work on the other. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, so I write about that in Being Human. I've talked about this on my podcast, and this one in particular, things like talking about the chakras and talking about reincarnation, both of these topics are ones that are kind of hot-button issues among Western progressives,
right,
alternative folks that... For whatever reason, many Westerners have just picked up these ideas from Eastern traditions of Buddhism and Hinduism, of chakras and reincarnation and karma, and pretty much everyone has just wholesale just accepted it.
Yes.
And they write this into their own stories, but without really questioning it or really evaluating it.
Well, they
and
take it somewhere.
People, you know, get it very attached, and they reify these ideas. You were going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say that they do question and they do take it a certain point, but they might just go by the whole package of the chakra system and then they work from within that. And that's my whole box thing. You know, I was just in the same place for a little while with someone, and so there was a lot of interaction going on, and this one person was so into certain belief systems like her astrology and different things, mm-hmm, like that. And I really had to just say, okay, we're all on the same page. It's just a huge page. I couldn't, because, you know, you can't, I can't argue. I'm not into arguing with someone about their belief system. You know, it's like, okay, that's good. I'm glad you're there, and right on, you know.
Yeah, and I would say for myself, I'm not really into arguing people's belief systems either.
No, I know you're not.
Strong
yeah.
positions in my book and in what I present to the public, but I do that because I want people to understand where I'm coming from, because I do talk a lot about the energy centers in the body, and the assumption everyone makes is, oh, you're talking about the chakra system. Is no, I'm not, actually. I'm talking about something that's extremely different. So I want to make it clear to people that that's not what I'm talking about. And within that, you know, I do a lot of work with people on a one-to-one basis. And when they come in with their belief systems, they're all just attachments. And ultimately, people need to move beyond that, that these are things that they're holding on to help create stories about themselves. And, you know, I'm not here to argue with their belief system, but what I'm here to do is move them into an experience where they can see quite clearly and immediately that these are beliefs that they have chosen to hold on to for themselves, and that has provided them with certain opportunities for experience, but also has created certain limitations for them. So, for example, if somebody comes to me and says, I really want to open my heart chakra, I really need to open this energy center, my response to that is, well, let's open up all of your energy and let's get everything aligned, because we don't need to deal with this one area that you think you're putting all your emphasis on. Let's just deal with your energy as it actually is, rather than as you're projecting it.
Yes.
Be.
Yeah.
So kind of moving beyond the belief into just direct experience. And when people have direct experience, you don't need to talk about chakras. We're talking about what's happening right here, right now, in your body, in your experience. We don't need to move into a subtle level. That we don't need that level of explanation.
Right. In your website, and when you're talking about the entheological paradigm being a map to reality and the personal path to freedom and true responsibility, I think it's a great move, because it's not often where you talk about freedom and responsibility being the same thing. And, you know, in my world here in Boulder, I don't know, 15 years or so ago, you know, people started, you know, we started going, oh, well, what's responsibility? It's your ability to respond. It's nothing more. It's nothing less. It's not a huge weight on your shoulders. So for me, once that got dissected into ability to respond, things started changing. But it's wonderful that responsibility and freedom can be joined together.
Yeah, I think that they're absolutely inseparable, that is the nature of free will. Free will means you're free to do whatever you want, actually, within the confines of reality. So, for example, I could say, well, I really want to fly. Well, I can't do that. You know, I can't just get up and fly. I need an airplane to go fly. So certain choices are limited, but I'm free to choose within this energetic system that we call reality. I'm free to make all kinds of choices within that. And because I'm free to choose, that means I'm also responsible for the consequences of my choices. And what I spend a lot of time talking about is that if people are choosing based on illusions or belief systems that do not correspond with what's actually happening in reality, that is where people are creating suffering for themselves and creating unhappiness, and not just for themselves, but also for others as well. So that through the process of becoming clear about your own energy and your own choices and your true responsibilities, that is the process that you go through in order to reach liberation for yourself, for your own personal happiness, which then also increases the happiness of everyone around you. But it's about being responsible for yourself. Now, given that egos play all kinds of games, our egos play games with ourselves and with others. When we are participating in ego games, we're not acting consciously, and we're actually participating in a lot of illusory systems. Therefore, we're not really being responsible for ourselves. So coming to a process of self-knowledge is about coming to an understanding of what are you truly responsible for. And, you know, the basic secret here that's out and that I'm trying to articulate in my books and in my work is that learning how to be responsible for yourself means you have to learn who and what you are. Now, the shocker there is that you and all of us, every living being, actually is God. This is what I'm defining as God, is each individual living being. Now, that means you have a lot of responsibility for yourself, and you have a great deal of freedom because you are God. That means there isn't any divine force out there that's going to punish you or reward you, nor is there any source out there that's going to save you or liberate you. In other words, it's your own responsibility. How you live your life is completely your own responsibility. Now, religions, cultures, and traditions, they've all come up with various schemes for how you should live your life, what kinds of choices you should make and what you should avoid and things you should do and how to be a good person. The problem is that most of those systems are wrapped up in various levels of ego projection and illusion, so they're not actually presenting authentic choices to people. So this process involves coming to self-discovery outside of any cultural tradition or what anyone says is yourself or is not yourself. It does take going into yourself individually to have that experience so that then you can get clear on your own identity, your own ego, your own energy, so that you can make authentic choices for yourself. And something that I argue a lot is that people aren't making authentic choices. It actually almost never happens where people are making authentic choices. So it's actually something very foreign to most people about what that actually means. And so I spend a lot of time talking about that and the process of how to come to that state.
Yes, well, it's interesting if you look at the word authority, for instance. You know, we all know how people look at that. If you are an authority, it means you know a lot. And if you're an authority over someone else, then it is this little power structure that automatically gets set up. And authority actually comes from the word to augur, which means to enlarge. Has nothing to do with power, or it just means an expansion or to enlarge. And so I love having that one in my hip pocket, because especially with what you're saying now, it totally fits in.
And yeah, become your own authority in the sense that, look, each individual person has the capacity to have what I would describe as a full energetic opening. And I like to use that term rather than enlightenment or awakening. I'm trying to get away from spiritual kind of terms because I'm trying to put it into a more natural language.
Which is a continuation process, the way you're wanting to put it.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Oh, I'm sorry. The way you are putting it puts it in a sense of a continuum. It continues. Enlightenment seems like there's a period afterwards, or it's just one thing. Like, once you do it, you're done.
Yes. Yes, that's also something that I've talked a lot about, that, you know, I say that, look, you can have as many mystical experiences as you want. You can have it once, or you can have it 100 million times, you could have it every day. That's actually not the point. Now, it's important to have that kind of unitive mystical experience because it does inform you as to what your true nature is. But the actual goal that we're shooting for here is an integrated life where you can be open with your energy and free from illusion and living your life in an authentic way. And that means actually making authentic choices pretty much at every moment. So I really kind of de-emphasize the brilliant flash of mystical awakening, which I think is important, but it's not about being in that state. It's actually about learning how to trust your energy and trust who you are so that, you know, everything in ordinary life and, you know, your ordinary activities can be authentic.
We've got one more week with Dr. Martin Ball, author of Being Human. For archives and any other show information, we can be reached at tributariesradio.wordpress.com, and our podcasts are on iTunes and wherever you'd like to find them. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.